Behind the Beer WNC is back. And this time, it's the final iteration of 2025. I'm a little sad, gentlemen. But this is a podcast where four friends get around the microphones and we banter about mostly high school football. And it all comes to an end as we just have the conclusion of the state championships this weekend in high school.
And wasn't that some crazy game?
Man, holy cow.
That
Shelby game, baby.
84 points. 84 to 41. That was the score of a state championship football game.
Gosh, that's amazing. It was an amazing game to watch.
It was. Holy cow.
It was fireworks. Yeah. It was literally every single time someone touched the ball, it was touchdown.
What about the kid from Watauga, though?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Watauga.
Burrows?
Yeah.
He had like two defensive touchdowns and four offensive touchdowns. He was the star of the show.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
So we do have a special guest today, Pat. You want to introduce our special guest?
I do. We have the unbelievable fortune of having the newly announced head football coach for AC Reynolds High School, Chandler Greer. Coach, welcome to the podcast. We're so glad you're here.
Yeah, guys, I'm glad to be here, man. I really am. This is cool. This is awesome setup. And this is actually my first podcast ever. I've done some radio stuff and interviews, but this is my first time sitting around hanging out with some guys that enjoy high school football and talk shop with a microphone in my face. So I'm pretty excited for it, man.
Well, hopefully it won't be your last podcast.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Depends on Lewis, probably.
No, we are all happy he's here.
We are, and we've gotten multiple texts today. It's like, please make sure Lewis is nice and all these. And we're like, guys, Lewis, we're building a relationship. Lewis,
I'm just feeling, like he I'm was feeling with, the hospitality now.
Just so like I'm, with Coach Walls. I mean, we're... but no, it's awesome. Thanks for Coach. He's got two youngins. Sunday, I know it's not easy taking time away, but he's in person in the studio as well. So shout out.
Coach, did you get to watch any of the state championship games?
I watched all of them.
Did you really?
That's awesome.
There you go.
Well, I love that WLOS broadcasted them.
Yeah.
And that makes a huge, huge difference.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the order that they've done it with, of course, the eight classifications, the 3 days of doing it, of different venues, you know, I thought it did highlight the schools really well. Thought it highlighted the stadiums and the venues really well. And, yeah, you guys said it, man. I mean, it's like every game 1 through 8 had a little bit of a different characteristic, okay. Right? When you had Robbinsville, Wilson Prep, that was just a slugfest. And then Murphy Tarboro, that was at points it seemed like a 3 yard and a cloud of dust off. And then it was, you know, big game. And I mean, Shelby, I'm happy for them. 84 points. I mean, I thought I was looking at a basketball score.
Have you ever scored 84 points in a game?
Never.
in a football game?
Never. I mean, and shout out to them, man. I know that's been a long time coming. And, you know, I'm really happy for that. Coach Will Banks, I'm really happy for that group of seniors. And that was awesome to see. Yeah. And then, but Watauga, that Evan Burrows kid. I mean, two defensive touchdowns. I think he had four offensive touchdowns. I mean, he just put up a stat line that I don't think's ever been seen before.
And he's a baseball player.
Duke baseball commit. And so, I mean, there's something there. They give me hell about baseball all the time. And I'm like, well, I mean, they can play football too sometimes.
He also thinks that they're the tougher athletes.
I never said that. That is never – check every podcast out there. That has never, ever been said. I mean, there's 25 pitchers on a college baseball team. If you think that those kids are tough – then that is just not the case.
Hey, if you're in Japan, they are.
Did you get so Lewis is devastated. His team of destiny, his state championship team, he said is the easiest pick ever. Brevard just ran into a buzzsaw.
That was
Reidsville is always good. They had a off year of some sort last year and lost to East Rutherford.
Right. In the second round.
Yeah.
So let's
real quick, let's run down the scores. So this is 1A to 8A. Wilson Prep beat Robbinsville 9-8. Tarboro beat Murphy 22-0. Shelby 84, Kinston 41. Reidsville 50, Brevard 20. Crest 31, Hunt 14. Player of the game was Eli Hemrick in that one.
Wow.
Watauga 47, Middle Creek 25. Grimsley 24 with the Million Dollar Man, Clayton 14. And then Huff 21, Millbrook 0. For the week, Carson 6-2. Lewis and Mike went 5-3. Pat, 2-6.
Agony.
So the final tally for the year. Carson and Lewis tie 82-68. They're going to wrestle in the yard after the podcast
yes!
for the championship.
Yes.
I'd like to announce that Lewis is the champion.
I got that.
I will not be. No.
I finished 3 back at 79-71, and Pat is buying us dinner. That's 72-79. So I just wanted to go over that real quick. But yeah.
Now, if you hearken back to the early beginning part of the season, Mike, you and I went to the Brevard game. You were there for that, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, but Lewis, you and Carson did not go that way. Obviously, Coach, you were there for it.
Let's hope.
Yeah. But you know, here's the thing. Brevard, obviously, unbelievably talented team, right? And it's no, I'm not understating it, how fast and how athletic Brevard is as a team, right?
I mean, absolutely.
Crazy. And then to your point, they ran into the buzzsaw that was Reidsville, and their athleticism and speed was superior to anything Brevard brought, from what I can tell. I was just not expecting that.
You know, that one was an interesting matchup because I thought, well, first off, you know, Coach Coleman at Brevard is a fantastic coach. And I kind of was thinking, okay, what is he going to do to try to take this tight end out of the game? The, you know, 6'8", 250 tight end, that's unbelievable. You know, and when you do that, then you leave open for other guys to make big plays. And Reidsville is just, I mean, those two guys that they have, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on their names.
But Deontay Neal.
For sure. I mean, goodness gracious, they're athletic. And I thought Brevard made plays and played the best that they could, you know, and but, you know, credit to Reidsville. I mean, when you got the guys, you got the guys. And yeah, that was a, you know, I was obviously cheering for Brevard, and the same thing as Murphy. I mean, I really credit, you know, how Joseph and his team played against Tarboro, who some consider Tarboro to be one of the most, two-way or not, one of the most dominant teams in the state with what they did.
Halftime, and it was scoreless, right? 0-0.
Murphy played great. I mean, they played great on defense. They were controlling the clock, moving it on offense, and I thought they made some plays to keep them in the games and had some opportunities later in the game. And you know, Tarboro just kind of pulled away. And again, I mean, that's another, I know we played them, but area team, I was pulling for them. And, you know, hated to see both those teams come up short.
We all sat here, maybe not even on air, but we chuckled a little bit at your schedule this year because we were like, yeah, they're not playing Shelby. They're not playing East or West Forsyth. But goodness, you had two of your opponents in the state championship, made and lost in the last round. And it was another fantastic schedule. Are you locked in for that one again this year? Will it be the same?
We are. Yeah. So we're on 2-year contracts and, you know, we changed the locations, of course.
Right.
So we're going to open up with Brevard at R.L. Dalton Stadium. And then week two, we've got Maiden again at home. And then week three, I believe is J.M. Robinson, right? So we're going to go to J.M. Robinson, who was a third round playoff team.
Right. Sorry, I forgot about those guys.
And they've got the Charlotte Cats for sure. And then we've got the fourth game of the season. Of course, Murphy, we're going to go to Murphy on that one. So we get to, might as well buy a plane ticket to go out there.
Tough place to play.
Pat has a plane. He'll be happy to take you guys.
Tough place to play there. Yeah. And then week five, we got Freedom, who was also a third round team, who Freedom, of course, was really athletic. They're going to be good again. And we got them at home. So our first five games are no cakewalk, for sure.
Well, welcome to high school coaching.
That's it.
Five third-round playoff teams.
Yeah, I love a challenge. I do. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a little bit trial by fire, and we're going to get thrown into it. But that's, you know, Coach Laws has made his, you know, made his stake at doing that for multiple reasons. It forces your team to grow up, and it lets you know very quickly what you do and what you don't have. And, you know, it's you're trying to plan and prep and build a team that can make these late November, early December runs. And you have to do that through a tough non-conference schedule, you know, so we don't shy away from it.
So listen, to you are on board, you will continue to schedule that tough 4-5 games.
You know, if I have it my choice, I would love to schedule area teams in that 4-5 games that are tough. And all of them give you a little bit of something different. You know, you got Brevard, of course, who is a tough, hard-nosed, athletic, but good team. Then you've got, you know, Maiden, who's, again, athletic. You got Murphy, who's running the triple option. You got Freedom, who likes to spread the ball over and run option football. And then you got J.M. Robinson, who looks scary coming off the bus. Yeah. So you get a little bit of everything in those first 5 weeks that kind of, you know, give you different personality types, if you will, of teams to set you up for the rest of the season.
So let's back up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us, who is Chandler Greer, for those of you who don't know?
Should I ask the most important question first?
Let's start with the most important question of all.
Let's start. Okay, so Coach, we ask this of everybody that joins the podcast for the first time. Think back to your high school years when you were in high school.
Which wasn't that long ago, really.
Indeed, certainly nearer than me. What was the defining music album of your 4 years in high school?
So I'm gonna do something that's probably never been done on this pod before. I'm gonna turn it over to Carson to also help me because we're about the same age, so high school around the same time.
When we were going around, it's like, I'll be honest, I wasn't super familiar with like what album meant. I was like, is this a CD? Is this how I took it is like, what was your, when you were playing, you were getting laced up Friday nights, like what's your go-to song? What's your go-to artist?
Yeah, man, I was about to say albums are, I'm talking like mixtapes or EP, that's what we're talking about, right?
Like, yeah, so I was like, I said I didn't know what an album was. Nothing like OG, like Lil Wayne.
That's literally what I was thinking. I mean, you got Lil Wayne when you're, I mean, him in 2014 was
absolute
hot,
prime.
Man. Oh my prime. Gosh. Yeah, Lil Wayne, that's kind of the start of Drake as well, okay, yes, right? Some Drake's old stuff.
You guys familiar?
Oh, yeah.
No, yep. Not at all.
You had Future, man. Future was kind of just getting started about that time right there. Yes. I tell you, man, I just was RIP, but you had Mac Miller.
Oh, yeah.
So there were some good ones, man. I mean, that was the prime. I'll go on record by saying, man, 2012 through 2016 was one of the best eras of music
Fun
ever.
Fun fact was my answer was Kids by Mac Miller because that was the only one that I could actually name. I couldn't name. I was like, I blanked on all the Carters, which I think that's an album.
Yeah, Carter 1, Carter 2, Carter 3, Carter 4. Carter
I was like,
five.
I didn't know
if
that was an album. I'm telling you, I was like, does it have to be on a CD? I watched it on, I had an MP3 player. So I don't know if that counts.
Well,
but.
Pat, I hate to tell you, I think the last CD... I remember this when I bought this. This was when I had probably just, I think I had just turned 16 or maybe when I was 17. The last CD I bought was in Walmart on a clearance bin, and it was Alan Jackson Christmas. That was actually the last CD I had
bought. Well, when Pat
says
album, he means record.
The record. Heck yeah, the record. Absolutely.
I mean, Alan Jackson Christmas, solid. Yeah. Don't, if you watch Hallmarks, just go ahead and just do not mention it on the pod. people will be coming up to you at Walmart and asking you what's your favorite Hallmark. All I did was say that, did y'all know there was a Hallmark at the Biltmore Estate?
No. You said you were watching it.
Okay. I mean, I had the, I think it was Maction Week or something. I had Maction on my phone. And of course, I mean, the wife and the kids, it's like, whatever to make the house
for
happy.
Sure.
It's like, I can, my
you know, phone. You can't give these guys anything. At the Jamboree last year, that Pisgah was the most physical team at the Jamboree, and by the time we got halfway through this season, Pisgah was now the most physical team in the metaverse.
Yeah. According to you, of course.
I didn't say that. You said it. I just said the Jamboree.
All right.
We go from talking Hallmark movies to physicality of a football team. Yeah. That's what I love about y'all getting together and talking about us on this podcast.
We laugh because it's the same conversation we would be having at the Fairview Tavern around a future. It's the exact same. We just record it.
That's right.
That's pretty much it.
Yes.
So tell us a little about you, where you're from.
Yeah, for sure. So originally from Knoxville, Tennessee. And like I said, I grew up a Vols fan. Bled orange, man. My parents had season tickets, so my dad and I would go to a bunch of games, and I mean, I'd live and die on Tennessee, man. And when I was a kid growing up, so that kind of cultivated the football love a little bit, and also helped me deal with some disappointment as well for the couple rough years that we went through, and so grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. My parents are still there. Went to Bearden High School. It's a 6A public high school in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I love it, man. I love my time there. I was there, 2010 to 2014, played every sport that I could, made, some great friends there, and good high school experience playing traditional sports at a public high school was awesome. I loved it. And you had every different walk of life there and every different kind of kid. And, it was great, so was there for 4 years, obviously. And then, got the opportunity to get recruited, kind of went through that stage, and I really wanted to go to Tennessee, and but unfortunately I was a little too small. I had a coach tell me, hey man, we love you, but you're a little too light. I'm not gonna say the word, but you're a little too light in the butt. And because I was kind of a late bloomer, I was about 260 coming out of high school.
Just so you guys know, when he came in here, he's a scary dude. He's huge.
Yes.
Big and all muscle. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, so about a little light in the butt, couldn't go to Tennessee. They offered a walk-on spot, and at that time I had an offer from Appalachian State, and And I kind of knew all along that that's just where I felt like, you know, the Lord was intending me to go. Just where I kind of felt like was home every time I went up, you know, and I just loved the tradition that they had up there. And, you know, it was a special place. So ended up signing, going to Appalachian State, playing there from 2014 through 2018. Experienced about every high and about every low that you could imagine in college athletics and being a student. And, you know, I had a lot of great coaches, a lot of great mentors up there, and kind of molded me into, you know, the man that I am today. And, you know, knew that I wanted to get into coaching. And, you know, it just was such a great time. I was blessed to be on some really good teams. We were one of the first, you know, we were the transition from the FCS to the FBS. And so I had the, you know, privilege of being on, you know, four bowl teams, three conference championship teams, playing against, we were top 25 at one point, you know, playing in the first Sun Belt conference championship game. And, you know, got to play with tons of guys that are now playing in the NFL, and, you know, be a part of some even better teammates and better coaches, in that time. So, that was a great time for sure. And was, unfortunately on the losing end of all the big games. You know, we took Tennessee to overtime. We took Wake Forest, almost to OT. You know, we were in the half with Clemson the year they won the national championship. We did get rolled by Georgia. say that. You know, and had Miami the year that they made a deep run with Mark Richt. And, you know, so just part of some really cool games that I got to be a part of. And, you know, so I got done at Appalachian State. You know, I had a business degree. And I think I told Pat this, but, you know, got engaged to my wife, met my wife up there, and being young and dumb and in love, I didn't have a job lined up.
Just going to get married. I don't just need a
said,
job.
Just going to get married. I asked her dad, and he said yes. And we was like, we'll figure out the job thing later. you know, so she, and then she ended up going to state, NC State for grad school. So we moved on out to Raleigh, and, I took a job kind of, you know, quite frankly, the kind of first job I could really find, just cause I was like, man, I need to get some money. And at that time, really no schools were hiring. It was kind of a funky time. It was 2019, 2020. If y'all remember what happened then, it was COVID time. Football was played in February. It was just a weird time.
It was
time.
A very weird time.
Yeah, a very weird time to get hired. And so ended up, you know, working that job and traveling all the time. I was doing sales, and man, I don't want to say I was miserable. I don't want to be that dramatic.
Nobody likes salesmen. I mean, it's true. You're sitting here with three of them,
wow.
But go ahead.
Wow.
Well, I don't want to say I was easy now. I don't want to say I was miserable, but man, I was just driving all over the place, just going to every little podunk town, lots of windshield time, and all the while I just missed coaching so bad. And so I ended up, I told my wife that, and my wife being so supportive, she said, "Well, go coach." And I was like, "Well, I don't know anybody in Raleigh. I mean, I don't know of any high schools. I don't know where to get my foot in the door." And I'll never forget, man. I think I just Googled it, like high school coaching jobs in Raleigh. First school to pop up was Green Hope High School in Cary, North Carolina. And I was like, "All right, man, I'm just gonna give them a call." And crazy how the Lord works, man. The guy that answered the phone call was a guy that was our offensive line GA at App. His name's Ty Norwood, and I guess I owe a lot of this to Ty, because Ty answered my call, talked to me, and said, "Hey, man, we can't pay you, but I need a tight ends coach." I said, "Tell me when time practice starts, and I'll be there." And so, you know, I come to practice, take a bunch of temperatures, because it's COVID year, you know, so I'm lining up, taking temperatures, and I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? But then the whistle blows, and it's just like, I was supposed to be there, you know, and I'm fired up, man. I don't think I'm doing like tight end blocking drills with no helmet, no shoulder pads, just, you know, ripping into high school kids more or less. But I'm just so excited to be out there. And, you know, that was my first coaching job, of course, was a unpaid volunteer, you know, do whatever you need us to do, take temperatures, carry water, coach tight ends, coach D line. Hey, can you also help with breaking down, especially, you know, cutting up film and helping us up, you know, load practice up. And, you know, so absolutely. And so did that. And then my wife and I found out we were pregnant, and we decided to move back closer to some help where her family is. And It's kind of how I got started here. Yeah. So that was a really long-winded answer, but
that's good. That's
a great answer.
That's the great thing about a podcast. You talk as long as you want.
Well, yeah. I mean, I turned it into a Joe Rogan type answer. It was a three-hour-long podcast.
So what position did you play?
So I played offensive line, and this is, I've said this before, but I just say offensive line because, you know, I've played all five positions. You know, I kind of bounced around to some different spots, and it wasn't because I was some stud. It was actually probably the opposite. I was just trying to find a spot to play. You know, we had a really good offensive line when I was up there at App. Two guys played in the NFL for, actually, I'll take that back, three guys played in the NFL for, goodness, the guy that I was behind played 12 years in the NFL, just recently retired. Another guy that ended up playing with just re-signed with the Atlanta Falcons and is their starting center right now, snapping it to Kirk Cousins. Another guy that I played with, you know, was a practice squad, you know, player that for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, another guy that I played with, you know, that I was behind, had a, you know, good stint in the NFL as well. So I was just trying to find a spot to play. I mean, it was hard to do behind these guys that were so good. And so if we had a guard go down, I'd try to learn guard and go over there and play. If we had a hole at tackle, I'd go over there at tackle. And then I'm just like, well, I've got this guard and tackle thing. I might as well learn to snap just in case, you know, because I want to get on the bus. I want to travel. I want to play. So I learned to snap and had a little stint, stint as center whenever needed during practice. And, you know, one time we had a couple tight ends down and they said, hey, you're going to be a blocking tight end. So get ready to go. And I was like, well, throw the ball to me and listen. And got one ball thrown to me at practice, and I caught it for about a 4-yard gain, but didn't get one thrown to me in the game. But, you know, so ended up probably being at right tackle. That was kind of the main spot for me. That's where I felt most comfortable and best at. So right tackle, if that's the answer.
So you've been at Reynolds now how many years?
4 years.
Four years.
I'm going on my senior year.
Senior year. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but like, how long were you there because did Levi Ledford, I mean, how did you get connected with Coach Laws? Did Levi play a role in it?
Yeah, Carson, that's a great question, man. It's, again, the Lord works in crazy ways, man. Okay. So, I moved back and, again, kind of got into the same thing where I moved back. I'm originally not from here, never played here. Don't really know anybody. And, now this time I'm already married, but now I got a kid on the way. So I really got to get a job.
That pays.
I really got to get a job. So I ended up working for my father-in-law and just kind of doing a bunch of stuff for him. And again, I enjoyed it, you know, but they say never mix business with family, but you know, I'm kidding. He was a fantastic boss.
So was your wife from West North Carolina?
My wife's from Canton. She's a Canton girl. And so we moved back there and I worked for my father-in-law, and he was, like I said, he was so good to me. He was a fantastic boss. But I kind of just had this really frank conversation with him and told him, I said, I want to get into coaching, and I miss it so much. And I miss it so much that COVID year was a little bit of a tease. And I was like, I just want to dive full into it. I want to do the teaching part too. Cause I knew the type of impact that the coaches had. And I was like, well, that's just 2 hours a day. I want to be there with those kids, you know, the other 7-8 hours. And so I was like, I'm going to go full into this thing. You know, I'm just going to do it. And, looked around some different spots, applied to some different spots. You know, so applied to some different places, got told no 3 or 4 times.
How do you say no to a, D1 college
absolutely,
offensive line?
Absolutely.
How do you say no to that? And I don't understand.
And I want to get the list of the schools because I wonder if they're going to be on the schedule,
Carson,
at some point.
I'm a nice guy, but I got the list in my head.
That fires me up.
And so I think that maybe the red flag, if there was any, I wasn't licensed. I didn't have my teaching license. And although I had made it very known that, hey, this is, I want to do this, I'm committing to do this, and I will get my teaching license as quick as possible. And so got told no a couple times, was feeling really discouraged. And back to your original point, Levi Ledford came in, and Levi said, hey man, I'm going to set you up with Coach Laws at Reynolds. And of course, I knew Reynolds. I was like, man, Reynolds, like, they ain't going to have a job there. Like, there ain't no way.
Did you know Laws? Because he's an App State guy,
so
too.
So I did not know Laws. Okay. I had never met Laws before. My only connection I had was my good buddy Levi, who I more or less roomed with in at college. And he, you know, he was helping us out at App. And, you know, and I just was like, yeah, absolutely set me up with Reynolds for sure, if that's possible. And
that's like a super hot blind date.
It's like, well, that's kind of what I joke about, man. I was like,
for sure, please.
That's the blind date of the matchup of the lifetime. And
not Inca, not North Buncombe. It's,
well, yeah, no shade.
I'm a North Buncombe grad. So,
well, you know, so I thought it was just going to be in a coaching capacity. And I was like, yeah, man, absolutely. Give him my number. I'd love to help out. Anyway, okay, I'll carry freaking water bottles. I don't care, man. I just want to coach. And so we ended up connecting. And again, Lord's working in crazy ways. I got my degree from App in marketing. I was a business marketing major, and a job opened up at Reynolds as a marketing teacher. And I applied and I interviewed. And that day, Mr. Alexander, our current principal, it was actually his first year as a principal. I applied, had an interview. He called me later on that day, offered me the job. And I said, I don't even need to talk about it. I don't need to discuss it. He said, take some time to think about it. I said, there ain't no thinking about it. I'm there. And, you know, and I guess I was one of his first hires at Reynolds as well, with him being his first year principal. So, and that was 4 years ago. I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, I knew it was a special spot. And I knew it was a spot that I wanted to be at. And, you know, I've kind of always had a motto, you know, just grow where you're planted. So I felt like I was planted there. I was going to do the best where my feet were, which was there. And, you know, it's been an awesome place. It's been a huge blessing to me and my family.
Do you know what your staff's going to look like?
Yeah, it's a great question, you know. And
there's some guys. You got some guys retiring, I would assume.
We got some guys retiring. They have served their time, and they deserve something next into their life, and you know, they're on to the next thing. So we got some guys that are gonna retire, and you know, we got some staff turnover. So, you know, I've had this job, got named the head coach about 50 hours ago. So there's some decisions we're still trying to work through and make through, but you know, there's gonna be some, there already is some turnover with some retirements, and you know, I'd like to try to bring some guys on that I know. And that I trust, you know, at the end of the day, it's guys that I want in the locker room that are going to make an impact on the kids, be role models to the kids and treat them well. And, you know, I've all kind of have this saying, character over competency. You know, I want guys that are high character, that are going to do the right thing, that are going to treat the kids well, whether or not they're great football coaches or not, that'll come. But, you know, I want high character guys that are going to make an impact on our kids.
Well, I'm sorry. You kind of danced around the question there, Coach. I mean, I'm assuming Coach Craig is probably retired.
You know,
Coach Brow probably retired. Oh,
Coach Brow ain't never going to retire.
He's retired twice.
He ain't never going to retire. Coach Brow will be there. You know, he can't retire. He knows where all the bodies are buried. So,
you got some big shoes to fill. You said you got some names. I mean, you ready to share any of those?
No, not yet. Not yet. We're still working.
50 hours. Things. You don't have the whole staff set. Come on, Coach.
When we were, you know, obviously talking, and I was like, he'll have been the coach for 48 hours. It's like, I would imagine that the work and the job has probably just gotten started for you, as where like you're probably making some phone calls, because as you know, football teams are, how many are in the college locker room? 100?
Well, now it used to be, you know, it used to be 120, but now 120. It's cut down to about 90.
So you, and then you have all the GAs and stuff. It's like if you, how, and it, there's no telling how many football people you know within things. So I think that's a great answer that you're going to, I do. I think it's a great answer. You're going to try and make some calls, bring some people in. I was actually going to ask you, are you going to make the call to Levi? Is Levi going to get back up on the mountain? I mean, he's the rocket QB1 from back in the day.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Levi, he's living down in South Carolina now. And
he's making that big money as a real estate guy,
I think,
right?
Is he still doing real
estate? Something like that. And you know, Levi's a great guy. I love him. And, but you know, sometimes they have a saying, man, don't hire your friends, you know? So it's going to be, like I said, we're just going to do a look over and see, you know, where guys fit in and what guys can contribute to where. And, you know, we've got some fantastic coaches on our staff right now. We've got some really high character guys that love the kids that have, you know, donated so much, not donated, but have given so much of their time to Reynolds. And you know, of course, I hate to see some of those guys retire. I hate to see some of those guys leave, but it's part of it, you know, and it's on to the next thing. And those guys are going to, you know, be successful in whatever they decide to do in their next phase. So I'm excited for it and see what happens. Yeah.
So you talk about some of these guys having excellent character building and all that. You know, everyone kind of got used to what Laws' culture was and the standard he set and all this. What's your culture going to look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's a great question. Coach Laws did a fantastic job of you know, making the kids. We both kind of come from the same lineage, if you will, the Jerry Moore tree. Jerry Moore was a longtime coach at App. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. And, of course, you know, he was the coach that they had the famous win against Michigan. And you know, and so Coach Moore did a really good job. And the thing that Coach Moore did so well was he made sure that, you know, players – knew that he loved them, right? And he knew that, you know, he cared about them more as a man than he did a player. And Coach Laws kind of embodied that same thing. And so part of what the transition period is, you know, me taking what I know works from Coach Laws, but also kind of putting my own touch on it, you know? So like I said, we came from the same lineage. And so I'm going to kind of carry a lot of that, and kind of use some of my stuff as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, we are education-based athletics, and we are trying to make a young man into a man, and you know, do that through teaching football, and do that through accountability and hard work, you know, and kind of the three pillars that if I had to pick three that I've kind of been taught and that I want to, you know, really instill is attitude, effort, and compete. You know, attitude every single day, because we can wake up and we can choose how we attack the day. Effort, because effort is the best thing that you can give. You don't have to be the strongest. You don't have to be the fastest. You don't have to be the most intelligent or athletic. But if you give great effort, good things are going to happen. And that just carries over, not just in football, but in everything. And then, of course, the last one is compete. And I think being able to learn how to compete, and there's some guys that say, yeah, I'm competitive, right? I mean, everybody's competitive, right? But knowing how to compete and knowing how to do it when you're down, how do you do when you're up? How to do it when you got some adversity? How to do it when you got all these kind of distractions? And truly teaching a high school kid to not only compete with their teammates, compete with their opponents, but compete with themselves and be the best that they can be. So if I had to pick my three pillars, that's going to be it. You know, attitude, effort, and compete.
So what's it like coming in after? There's got to be some pressure coming in after a coach like Coach Laws. He's been at Reynolds a long time, won state championship, won like 1,000 conference championships in a row. What's that like coming in after somebody like, there's got to be some additional pressure there.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts there?
You know, so everyone keeps on mentioning the big shoes to fill, and they're exactly right. And let me tell you exactly how big those shoes are to fill. I'm going to tell you the size of shoes they are. They're 184 wins, 12 conference championships, and 3 state championship appearances. So that's how big the shoes are. But you know, I keep saying this, but Coach Laws doesn't measure his success in wins and losses, you know, and he measured it in the amount of impact that he has on kids, you know. Now with myself, you know, I'm coming in 0-0, you know, I have no wins, no losses. And, you know, I think you always, the locker room listens a little bit more when you're winning. You know, you can have all these great messages and all these great sayings and life lessons and everything. But when you're winning, you get the kids' attention even more. Right. So that's on my job. That's part of my job and part of our staff's job to put a winning product out on the field. And, you know, so it is big shoes to fill, you know, but there's only one way I can do it. And it's the way I know, you know, and Coach Laws, of course, has done done a fantastic job in his career. And I'm excited to kind of keep it going on the foundation that he's laid.
To that point, too, with this conversation, you know, Mike and Lewis and myself were all on the boosters, mm-hmm. so we all are familiar with this. And Carson was at Reynolds mm-hmm. as a student for a while. But the community, and I think you and I talked about this in our one-on-one, the community at Reynolds is obviously mm-hmm. amazing. I don't know that there's a better, supportive community out there. And maybe I'm biased. I'm sure I'm biased. But Talk a little bit about that. What has been your experience so far with the community?
The community is unbelievable. I mean, I love the Fairview community, the Reynolds community. They're special. You said it. And it's okay to be biased. I'm biased. I think they're awesome, you know? And
Pat talks about the Reynolds community while he lives in the Inca community.
Right.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, the community is awesome. And they are. They're so supportive. They're always willing to help out. And I think, you know, what makes that community so special is high school sports still matter, right? Particularly football. And it's the biggest kind of what, you know, Coach Laws sold me on a little bit, you know, and again, Reynolds didn't need selling, but one of the things he told me is it's a Asheville school that feels like a small town on Friday night, right? I mean, you got so much support where Friday nights mean something and Friday nights matter. And you got kids that grow up playing for Reynolds, you know, playing for the Rockets, and when they get to that high school level, they're excited for it, you know? And I think that goes into the community, and, you know, just as far as how good the community is, we don't have to look any further than last year when Hurricane came through, and you see a community like the Fairview Reynolds community that truly, you know, leans in and straps it up and says, man, let's go. We're going to help each other out. And it doesn't matter what you look like, don't matter where you come from. If you live here, we're going to help you out. And I saw that firsthand and really just made me fall even more in love with it.
Yeah. And then you've touched on it a bunch, but you've got the Fairview community. It's one of those, it's not many seats are filled up on Friday nights at every place in Western North Carolina. Reynolds always has a good turnout, always has a good showing. You're coming in, you didn't graduate from Reynolds. You've kind of been brought into this community through your wife, and then you've put in the years. Obviously, there's been rivalries for Reynolds over the years. And then I grew up going to Fairview, Cane Creek. Robertson was that built-in rivalry. You know, as you being the head coach, I know every game matters, and I know coach talk and stuff like that, but, I mean, do you go into it next year? Do you think Irwin? Do you think Asheville? Do you think Robertson? I mean, do you just have three rivals?
No, we do not have three rivals. No, and I'll say this, man, it's, you know, we've got our rivalries. The kids have got their rivalries, and you're right. Coach speak, every game matters.
Yes.
And, you know, especially when you're coming in your senior year, man, and you got 10 guaranteed opportunities of football left, every game matters, right? But that is what makes high school sports so special, is you've got the crosstown rivalries. You know, you got the high, man. You got Asheville High School, tradition of really good players, tradition of really good coaches, and that game's special, man. I mean, that game's special for its different reasons, but, you know, I love coaching in that game. And then you got, of course, you know, TC game, and that game has got its, you know, that game has got its things that makes it special, and the fact that we lost to them suckers last game of the season for the conference. And then you got the Irwin game 2 years ago. We lost to Irwin to lose the conference. So, you know, there's a chip on our shoulder right now of getting back to that standard of being where we're supposed to be. And, you know, Irwin 2 years ago, TC last year, you know, those games are rivalry games and they matter, you know?
So props for you for keeping last year's schedule, going back to that. Of course, I mean, you're kind of forced to, because he signed it last year, right? So we were talking about this a couple episodes ago. What happens? You go 0-4. Do you have the same leeway as Laws would have? Because like people like me would, of course, been like, Reynolds is burning down.
People like me. People like me.
But these guys, they would be like, nah, this is Law's typical year. They're going to bounce back, win conference.
They'll figure it out, yeah.
No.
Are you going to have that same leadway?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and it's a hypothetical, but it's a hypothetical that has a chance of happening, you know? And
which it could have happened last
year. Sure.
I mean, anytime. Yes, for those sure. Tough four games.
For sure, it is. It's a tough four game.
It's five with the new conferences.
Five games. Right.
You know, heck, it's a tough 10 games. I mean, that's just the conference is getting better, and it is. And, you know, I don't want to go somewhere where the expectations are low.
Correct.
You know, I want to go somewhere where we expect to win these games and we expect to be in these games. And, you know, when you are, if you ever are in that situation, and I've been in that situation as a player, and it sucks and it's tough. And that's just, there's teachable moments in everything. And you just, you know, and you just hope that a high school kid can get it through their thick skull. And you say, listen, man, things aren't going well right now, but right now it matters more than ever. that we continue to give great effort, we continue to stay together, and I think just use it all as a teachable moment. I don't want to be in that teachable moment, to be honest with you. I don't want to be in that 0-4 teachable moment, but knowing it might happen, right, because it always has the possibility of happening, you got to be ready for it, you know? And so we're going to take the challenge on, face on. We're excited, man.
Hey, now you pointed out about the improvement in the conference and the point about Irwin and TC with the conference. That was a big theme of this year's podcast, was how excited we all were that there was actually some parity across the MAC. It wasn't going to be just
Reynolds AC winning by Reynolds 40 every week.
Running by 40 and just being boring. But it was actually good competitive football. And I think that's – we've been talking about the whole season with the NIL consequences at the college level, with the devastation that's happened. And it's permeating down to the high school level and that sort of thing. That we were talking about the Reidsville. Wouldn't the Reidsville tight end, didn't they talk about that? Did he go to Providence?
Yeah, he came back.
And then came back.
And then came back. So, I mean, how does that set up going forward with this?
Well, we don't have any NIL at Reynolds.
Wait, you don't have like a – you do have an NIL
I tell you what we got. You ready for this? You ready for this? We've got free breakfast and we've got free lunch, courtesy of Buncombe County Schools.
Yeah.
So, I love that. I love that.
That's my sales that's pitch funny. Right there.
But for real, though, how much money is Pat giving you for NIL?
And Bill McGee.
Well, so you talk about the rise of the conference, man, and it is. It's fun. It's, you know, I think all these – I'll go on record by saying this. You know, the MAC has good coaches. Has got great coaches. And I'd argue to say, you know, these coaches are great. You stick some of these coaching staffs on some of these teams in your Charlotte, your Raleigh areas, and they're really good teams because we got great coaches. We've got great players as well. Now, I say the rising tide kind of lifts all ships. I mean, you know, you've got Irwin, who won the conference 2 years ago, and that Irwin team 2 years ago was really good. They made a playoff run. Those coaches have always been good. They've got good players. And you know, last year, you had TC. TC won the conference. They had really good coaches. They've always had them. You know, we've got good players. And, of course, you got Asheville. I mean, Asheville's going to be they were really young last year. And I think Court would tell you this. They took their licks because they played a lot of freshmen. Those kids are going to be back, and they're going to be good, and they're really good. And they weren't just freshmen that they just said, hey, go out there. They were freshmen because they were good, and they played because they were good. And then, of course, you know, you got Inca, North Buncombe, and, you know, those teams are getting better and better. And, you know, you look at their JV teams, and their JV teams are good. Varsity teams are competitive. So it's getting as an all-around better product. And like you said, parity's happening, and I think it's good for everybody. And, you know, at the end of the day, everybody loves to compete, so it's better for everybody.
So you talked about the coaches in the area. We're really you and Coach Radford are the only two coaches that are not almost ready for retirement. Inca right. Coach retired.
Yeah.
Coach Pruitt, probably not far. He's probably a couple years from being eligible for his North Carolina retirement. I mean, there's going to be a lot of turnover in the area.
Yeah, West Henderson.
West Henderson, their coach retired. I mean, they're looking for a head coach. What do you see the landscape moving forward as far as coaches coming in, coaches retiring, the whole conference in general?
Yeah, great question, man. I think, you know, there's a fellowship of coaches. And I think that a lot of these, particularly, you know, I guess I'd classify myself as a young coach, but these young coaches.
The youngest.
Yeah, we've got to stick together. You know, we've got to create relationships. You know, we've got to learn from each other. And, you know, I try to do my best in you know, kind of maintaining relationships and kind of, you know, growing your network as far as young coaches goes, because that is the guys that are getting the torch passed to them, right? And we've got some good young coaches in the area. You know, and like you said, you know, we've got Coach Pruitt. Yeah, I don't know how long he's got, but, you know, he's a great coach and he's done a really good job there at Irwin. And it is kind of just this passing of the torch of these coaches. And now as far as new coaches coming in, you know, you're going to have a steady, you know, guys that want to get back involved, right? That guys that maybe have played at places that are going to be community coaches that want to come back. You've got guys that are, you know, still going to college for education that are wanting to get back into coaching and kind of going there. So, you know, it's my job as now a head coach, and I think it's kind of one of the hats that you wear as a head coach to kind of always keep your finger on the pulse as to, you know, what guys are coming in, what guys are leaving, what guys are kind of coming through and graduating from college, what, you know, these community coaches, what are some guys that could help us, and just kind of building that network and plugging these guys in. And that's kind of one of the many hats that you wear, is to be able to you know, kind of play a little bit of hypothetical of getting these guys in, seeing where they want to coach.
And you mentioned, it's like, I think we saw, was his name Kyeem Plummer?
Yeah.
Kyeem Plummer.
Now he's back at Asheville.
From Asheville. Something happened with his, it might have been injuries or something. And he said he's stepping away from college football, and he's coming back to Asheville, and he's going to get involved in coaching. And I think that's a key part, because we obviously know how expensive it is to live here. And we know, you know, it's people our age are not just, I mean, people our age are not just like picking up, moving, buying 4-bedroom, 3-bath houses, Pat Pohl's 6-bedroom, 6-bath houses,
mansions
in Asheville. And so I think that that's something that's super important to keep that, like you said, the pulse on it, because you've got those people that may be coming back to home trying to figure out what that next step is. Well, they can then make an impact. Well, they may just start as a, you know, volunteer assistant doing, hopefully we're not doing temperatures anymore. If Pat had anything to do with it,
he would report us to the government.
Would absolutely be doing temperatures every day, because you can never be too sure.
That's right.
Right.
but no, that's awesome, because you've got how many did you have, so Talon James was was a former player, right?
Yeah, so that's, you know, kind of where you, I guess, you know, you got to have your thumb on the pulse as to guys that could be good coaches. Like, yes. I've kept, of the guys that I've coached in my 4 years at Reynolds, whether this is just my psychotic self, but I kind of keep a list of kids that I think would be really good coaches one day. And like you said, you know, these are kids that obviously care about Reynolds football, right? These are kids that I knew were good players, right? These are kids that I think would be a good fit for our program, or just that I know can coach. And like you said, you know, eventually there's going to be a little bit of a lull if a kid graduates from college, or if a kid doesn't really know come be a part of something, come coach, right? But like you said, we had Talon James that was a former player that coached tight ends for us this year. He did a good job. You know, we got Malachi Ray, who played at Reynolds, who is a fantastic young coach. I think a lot of Malachi. I really do. He did a really good job for us this past year. And then you got Jari. You got Jari Patterson, man. Jari did a good job coaching for our coaching our receivers. And kind of Jari, same thing. He got done, and Malachi and Talon. You know, they got done with college, and, you know, they're trying to kind of figure out those next steps of what they want to do. And, you know, a couple of them got some career jobs that they're doing, but they're young. They're not connected. You know, they're not married yet. Let's get you into coaching. Let's do it and see how it fits. And it's a good question, but you got to kind of keep those networks strong just in case, you know.
So you talked earlier about not winning the conference the last 2 years. Three of us of the four consider Reynolds a standard. You guys win the conference.
I do not.
We argue about it weekly.
We argue about it. So you guys are the standard in Western North Carolina. You guys win the conference. You guys make playoff runs. Reynolds is the team everybody wants to beat. Everybody.
Yep.
How do you get back to winning those conference championships? We talk about, you know, more equality in the conference. It's tougher now.
Absolutely.
Irwin's better. The injury really killed him this year.
Mm-hmm.
Robertson's better. North Buncombe's better. Everybody seems to be better. Asheville, of course, is better. Sorry.
You didn't say Inca.
How do you get back to winning conference championships?
Well, you said it. We're going to get everybody's best. And to get back to winning conference championships, I'm making sure from day one that our kids, of course, they know the expectation and they know the standard. But our kids, the team, the kids that are currently on our team haven't won anything. And you can say that, well, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we did this. Like, well, you seniors, that was your freshman year. And y'all, with the exception of maybe one or two, weren't a part of that varsity team that did that. So y'all ain't won anything. So your chest better not be out thinking that, you know, your crap don't stink. Because we've gone a long time. And
a long time, two years.
Yeah, 2 years. That's ages in high school football, man.
At Reynolds, for sure.
You know, and it's like, you know, we've got to get back to it. We've got to get our edge back. We've got to get a little bit of chip about us, you know. And for a long time, we've had the target on our back. And now we need to start putting some targets out, because I think that's just kind of what we, you know, we need to kind of attack it in that approach that, man, we're starving. We're starving. We want it again. And, you know, and it just, and it does, there's no magic snap of the finger thing that we can do. There's no magic saying, there's no magic anything. It is stacking days. It's stacking days with the first workout and then the first, you know, continuing all the way until summer. And then we start stacking summer workouts. We start stacking summer practices. And then, you know, starting in week one, it starts. And, you know, it's just a habit that we've got to get into.
So real quick, as a former offensive lineman, it seems like offensive line play is down in this area. 2 years ago, Irwin, fantastic offensive line. Other than that, it just seems like Asheville's got some big kids, not a lot of great offensive linemen in the area, which makes it tough. They're the unsung heroes. They're the guys who Absolutely. Get it done. And obviously, as an offensive lineman, three of the four of us were offensive linemen. Not Carson. He played second base or something. I don't know.
I think he was right field.
I don't know what he played.
I did get moved to right field.
Just kidding. Anyway, how do we get back to having some fantastic offensive linemen that can dominate the line of scrimmage? It just seems like the size, the athleticism, those kids are not coming. They're not showing up anymore.
You also, know, with that, are you going to be helping with the line?
You know, that's I'm an O lineman through and through, like you said, and I will have my. I'm going to let whoever coaches the O line, whether it be me, whether it be another assistant coach, I'm going to let them be their own coach, and I'm going to let them be the head coach of their position group. But I can't help it. I love offensive line play, so I'm going to have my hand in it a little bit, just because, again, I know how important of a role that it is. It's the hardest group to coach. It is. And it's the only position group that's got five guys. And if four of the five guys do their job and one guy don't, then it's a negative play that's going to happen. So it's the hardest group to coach. But it's the best group to coach. It's the best kind of kid to coach. So to answer your question of where the area offensive linemen are, they're there. We just got to develop them, you know, and that's where I've got to do a good job of developing kids, you know. But it's like, it's your prototypical stereotype. You got the big kid that's one of the softest, and that's in every school, you know. And I tell you, too, we've got to get back to making offensive line cool again. You know, we really do.
It's not cool. They don't score touchdowns.
They don't. They don't.
They don't get the fame.
That's right.
They're the unsung heroes.
They are. They are. And we've got to. If you're a JV offensive lineman for Reynolds, I make it a point to treat you. I'm gonna treat you the same as every kid, but I'm gonna treat you a little special. I'm gonna make you. You're a rock star, man. Because it's cool that you play offensive line. Harness together, and there's no such thing as a good team with a bad offensive line. Right. There's just not. No. You can be a really good offensive line and have a bad team. But those two things, vice versa, they never work. You know, so we've just got to develop them, and we've got to make them feel like their job's important. We might have to hurt a couple feelings, moving some of these defensive linemen, tight ends over to the offensive line. And I say hurt feelings. I got my feelings hurt. I thought I was a receiver tight end one time, and then I got moved to the offensive line. So I got my feelings hurt. But, you know, we had a kid like that this year. And it wasn't due to his lack of ability at all. It was the fact that we were so beat up on the offensive line at so many points this year that we just like, hey, we need a left tackle. We need somebody that can be aggressive, can come off the ball, and it's a kid that played tight end, that played defensive end for us, and we ended up moving him to left tackle spot. He plugs right in, selfless as can be, really makes it his own, and that was probably week four we made that transition, and he ended up having a great year for us. And, you know, so it's kind of a multi-pronged answer. You know, we've got to develop them. We might have to break a couple hearts, and you know, but they're there. We just got to get them out.
So the historically at Reynolds, the best athletes are on defense. Do you stick with that, or do you you looking more of offensively? Because we have heard in the past that the best athletes go to defense, and what's left over goes to offense.
No, that's not true. No,
come on, that's
no,
what we've
that's
heard.
Not true.
We've seen it with our own eyes.
No, that's not true. We put our kids at the best place for Reynolds to win football games.
Okay,
you know, we put our kids the best place that they're going to be able to play, whether it be on offense, whether it be on defense, special teams. We're going to put our kids in the best opportunity for us to win, because nobody cares how many tackles you had. Nobody cares how many catches you've had. If there's an L on the final, you know, if there's an L on the schedule where you lost.
So your point about the offensive line, right? I got to get back to
come
that.
On, let's go.
I am a former offensive.
I know. I loved, right? And I loved coaching your son. Your son was a heck of an offensive lineman.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. He loves it still too, but hey, you guys, the other ones that are offensive linemen too, you were talking there just a second ago about making it cool again, right?
Right.
Well, am I wrong that like the blindside offensive tackle in the NFL is one of the highest paid?
Oh, you're positions? Not wrong. No. Yeah.
So there's that. But right. Then don't we all know that once you get to the offensive line and you get those pancake blocks or you get that pull around, just ear hole.
Pat, you're giving me goosebumps
isn't
right now.
Isn't that the freaking juice? Isn't that awesome?
Pat's doing lime and porn down there.
What, you're kind of talking dirty into my ear right now, man. I'm getting a little excited about
was
that.
Was it Will Campbell that said, like, he's like a defensive end. He's like, you get one sack a game, you max contract, you're a Hall of Famer. And he's like, and he's an offensive lineman, you give up a sack a game, you're an Amazon driver.
Amazon, absolutely.
It's like that is the truth, but I have gotten more familiar with offensive line play because of
all three of our kids are offensive line.
I tell you, man, it's a cliche saying. Yeah, it's a cliche saying. I mean, if you want, you know, offensive linemen make the best husbands. Offensive linemen make the best, you know, bosses, employees. Offensive linemen make the best coaches. Offensive lineman would, you know, if there was an offensive lineman that ran for president of the United States, I'd vote for him. Seriously, it's offensive line play and offensive line guys and the mentality that you have to have as an offensive lineman that makes you special. It really is. I mean, it's the only position where you have a made up stat, right? Pancakes.
That's it, man.
That's what I told our O line. I said, y'all don't make catches. Y'all don't have yak. Y'all don't have tackles. Y'all have nothing. I said, the only stat that matters to us as an offensive lineman is winning. Winning or losing. And then, yeah, I'll give you stickers for pancakes, but it's winning and loss.
I'm calling my sister. My sister just got recently married to a former running back
from
Cardinal Gibbons. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm going to call her and get Jack to go out with his offensive lineman. Because if they're really the best husbands, that's what I want for Emma.
Yeah. Right. You definitely need to switch that up.
Now, Coach, you have been the head coach for an hour and a half. You've obviously still seen the players that you have on your team. I'm curious if you have a sense of what's coming up. I know you haven't even had spring ball yet or any of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Paint the picture of maybe who your upcoming leaders you see maybe or some of your standouts. What kind of finger on the pulse do you have as far as what we can maybe hope to see in maybe spring ball or what may emerge?
Yeah. You know, we've got a really good young group coming up. This group that we had coming up, they went 8-0 on JV.
Nice.
You know, and they're a good young group. They're a group that has been together for a long time. You've got your kids from Reynolds Middle that have been together for a long time and running through the Reynolds Youth League. You got kids at Cane Creek that have been together for a really long time. So they know how to play together. They mesh well together and they're friends. I mean, they're their boys. They're all tight in the locker room, which is what you want, you know? So that's kind of the young group that's coming up. The returning guys, we've got some really good players coming back. Now we're losing a lot of good players as well. We're losing a lot of guys that have played key snaps, that have been around the program, that know the ins and outs and the expectations and have played some big snaps for us. We're losing that group. Everybody's losing the senior class, right? That's important. But the kids that we've got coming up, we've got some special ones. We do, particularly in the skill position. And then also offense and defensive line as well. So, you know, it's our job to put those kids in the good spots to win. And, you know, so I'm excited to get those kids and get going again, man.
So quarterback play was a huge
concern.
You guys had two different quarterbacks this year. Some injuries, different things. What do you look forward to next year as far as quarterback? What are we looking at there?
Yeah, so we our two quarterbacks that we've had on our team, that we have currently on our team, they've done a great job, and it's a hard job. Playing quarterback is the easiest place to play quarterback is in the stands, right?
And absolutely.
Same place. Or on a podcast.
Hey, coach,
or on a podcast.
Sure.
Or on a podcast.
Hey, dude, yeah. I'm one of the best coaches
in the world. I've literally never
right
lost
here
a game sitting right
never
here.
Never, no. And despite what everybody may think, you know, playing NCAA and playing Madden does not prepare you for 6'4", 250 in your face quickly, and you got to make a read where the guy's barreling down. And, you know, it's a hard position. And our two kids that did it for us this past year, did it did it at a good level that you know.
I mean, one was a wide receiver, right?
What's that?
One was a wide receiver.
I tell you, and that's kind of the type of kid and selfless mentality that we hope that we have, right? One was a converted wide receiver, you know, another kid that came over and did a good job for us and will continue to do a good job for us. And that's the thing. We've got the quarterbacks that we need, and they're both different skill sets. They're both, you know, they've got their skills that they're good at. One's a little bit more run better, one's a little bit more pass better, and you know, so they're going to do a good job for us.
So as far as what's your opinion upon moving upon schools within Western North Carolina?
Let's call it what it is.
Let's call it the transfer portal of high school. I mean, cause we know this is happening. What, you know, we've talked with other coaches, every coach in Western North Carolina knows it happens. A lot of coaches that we've spoke with, they want to be the place that people want to go play. So, you know, how do you instill, like, with you, with your age, that's going to be a big topic for probably for the next several years because let's just call it like we see it. You're 30 years old, very, very prestigious job. How do you make sure, are you going to instill something with the weight room? Because I've always said the best way to get kids to want to come be a part of your program is the kids in your program. So is that something, are you going to make an emphasis in the weight room, trying to create that competitive culture? I've seen what football players at app, how the workouts were. Is that something that you're going to have your finger, you know, your finger right on?
Carson, you said it, man, the biggest recruiters for your program are going to be your kids. And I don't say recruiters. I mean, the biggest, you know, supporters and proponents and people that carry your flag, the best are the kids, you know? And so, you got to make the kids feel involved, make the kids feel important, make the kids feel, like they belong. And, you know, and then it goes a good, again, back to as far as, you know, giving them the opportunity to thrive as a student, at school. You know, you got to be a place, that kids want to be at in the hallways, right? The kids that want to be at in class and the kids that, that you got, right? You got to really invest into them. And, you know, as far as how the world of football and really all sports are now, man, it's almost a little bit of a cultural thing where kids are just, they always feel like the grass is greener on the other side, right? And they're always, you know, they'll transfer, they'll quit, they'll leave at the drop of a hat at the first sign of adversity. And that's what we as adults, us as coaches have got to correct, you know? And I think too that when kids do that, you know, you can't beat your head out on the wall about it. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to coach who you got, you know, and you got to coach and you, cause you will drive yourself crazy thinking about, well, what if this kid leaves? What if this kid leaves? We're going to coach the guys we got in our locker room, you know? And it's like, at the end of the day, I want you as Reynolds Rocket, but if you don't want to be a Reynolds Rocket, I ain't going to make you, you know? So, that's kind of the mentality that you got to have and, you know, blame it on college football, blame it on whatever you want to of the transfer portal and all this, but it's the reality that we have now and we got to go with it.
And I think as a young parent, I'm trying to, I've learned a lot from these guys, but then it's like you said, it's half the time, it's not just the kid. It's a lot of it starts. And when I was coaching, a lot of it, you know, we can't control as coaches what is said at the dinner table, but we can control what is said. We can control what happens when you're with us for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And so we just wanted our kids, because I mean, who wouldn't have wanted to go play at Robertson when we were coaching at Inca? And it's like they win
baseball,
and they win 3 state championships. It's like, and we had 2 kids go play Division I baseball from Inca that ended up staying, graduating from Inca, but they would have been in the lineup at Robertson. But we, you know, we want, and of course you hear rumors and stuff, but you've got to try and make those kids, you know, you got to, it's the tough love. It's the ones that, you know, when I'm having a kid and I'm getting texts from someone that a kid that I coached, 5 years ago, it's like, congrats, coach. It's like, I've not talked to him except for Christmas and Thanksgiving for the last 5 years. And it's stuff like that. It's when you're able to make the impact. But, but no, that's, I think all that is very true.
And, you know, kids and people are tribal by nature, right? And you want to go, like, even if you're a kid playing youth league, you want to go to where the best team is.
Yeah.
Right. You want to go to the best, where the best kids are. And, you know, it's like, I mean, even us as adults, man, like, you know, it's hard to root for your team in the NFL, MLB, whatever it is, when they're losing, right? I mean, it's like, but it's past couple of years, it's easy to be a Chiefs fan, right? It's easy to kind of be tribalized and say, hey, I'm going to go over here where the success is, or I'm going to go over here where my buddies are. But it's like, you know, man, it's just life don't always work like that, you know, and football is a perfect metaphor for life, and you got to kind of sometimes stick it out where you are, you know?
I had a meeting one time, and it was in college, and it's like, hey, you know, you can discuss playing time all you want, whatever. It was a parents meeting. It was my first year at App, and it was like, and I don't even remember this because I obviously wasn't there, but my dad remembers, it was like, hey, you know, if you ever want to discuss playing time or anything, it's like, this is college. This is not travel ball or anything. Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, have your kid come in and, you know, and we can discuss it. Just have him bring his uniform. And it's like interesting. And then Kermit Smith's obviously way different of a more of an open door mentality. But his whole thing was that, you know, we'll discuss, you know, what I think will help prepare you or make you a better asset on the team and help you contribute to us winning. But, you know, we're not going to discuss other kids.
Sure.
And that's where, you know, you've got so many parents and you've got so many kids that think that their kids are invincible and they're all going to play SEC football. And when you walk through the door, if you're not going to go play SEC football, I can promise you there's a lot of kids on Friday nights that's not playing SEC football. And let's just call it. I mean, that's just the reality. So how are you going to manage expectations? Because we've discussed this with every coach that's sat down, you know, about the projectables, about what you got to measure. You know, Coach Law's always, you know, try and be honest. You want to try and be transparent with them. You're not making up sure. Stories, giving them false hope and stuff like that. You know, is that something that you're going to try and create, you know, the same sort of like transparent conversation of managing expectations?
Yeah, I mean, you got to be transparent and you got to be able to, you know, if a kid has those aspirations, particularly to go at the college level, you know, you've got to make them understand the type of job that it is, right? And it's like,
It's a job.
It's more than a job. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, when I was in college, I guarantee you I was not working 40 hours and I was not getting paid. This was before the NIL era. So I'm working an 80-hour job, you know, and of course I got my school paid for and I'm not complaining. I'm not. But, you know, it's like when a kid has those aspirations, which is awesome. I want them to, you know, you got to make them understand what is the expectation and what is the commitment, right? And then you got to look at, okay, well, where is a place that you can go and play? And play. I don't want you to go and sit because it's already hard enough. And when you go and you don't play, it becomes harder. So where can you go and play and get your foot in the door? And unfortunately, now the world of college football recruiting is so backlogged and it's so jammed up right now.
It's wild.
It's wild. So, I mean, like, if a college coach is listening to this, he's going to get pissed and not come to Reynolds. But my advice is to a kid is like, man, get your foot in the door. Get your foot in the door. And if you think that you're better than that school that's going, well, you need to take you a slice of humble pie. You need to go. You need to perform and prove that and get the film. And then if you feel like you have the opportunity to go somewhere else, then get in the portal and do it. But go somewhere first and prove that you can do it, right? And then, Carson, you alluded to it and you said it. I mean, unfortunately, man, body type. Body type is the biggest... biggest differentiator, you know, they're
measurables. That's the first thing they look at.
That's it. That's literally the first thing they look at because we have some amazing football players here in Western North Carolina. And a lot of those amazing football players, unfortunately, are under 5'9". And it's just what it is. And it's nothing that they've done, but it's just, you know, they're going to look at body type and it's no hard feelings. It's nothing. But at the end of the day, that college coach is trying to keep his family fed, trying to keep a check coming to his bank account. And it's like, if he misses on a kid, then that's kind of his butt on the line a little bit, you know? So me as a coach, you know, I feel like humbly I've had the benefit of seeing that side. And I think I can offer that kind of insight to a kid if that's something that they want to do. So like you said, it's managing and setting expectations and really trying to assist them in those decisions.
So you kind of mentioned it as head coach, your role is to kind of assist them with those decisions of where to go and what to do. How do you handle the parent side of it?
Yeah.
Every parent thinks their kid is a SEC football player.
Yeah.
How do you handle that with parents?
Yeah.
Is it a preseason meeting? Is it meetings within the year?
You know,
what's the deal there?
Yeah, it's constant communication. I mean, it's answering the parents when they want to talk, because at the end of the day, it's their kid, right? And, you know, all of us would go around the table and say, well, my kid's the best. No, my kid's the best. Well, I mean, truly, like, we all love our kids. And while our kids are awesome, and I love my two sons more than anybody, and there's times that, you know, I think that their crap don't stink. I think they're the best thing ever. And then there's times where I'm just like, all right, man, come on. You're like, eating, come on. You know, so managing those parents and those expectations, you know, you got to be transparent with them, you know, and I am on the same team as you are. I want what's best for your kid as well, right? When your son goes home, you know, for the 12 hours that you have him at home, and I have him the other 12 hours, we're working together to make this young man, and I want to be on the same page as you. Now, when it comes to if your son can line up and play football for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, well, we're going to have a serious conversation about that, you know, because if you're, like we said before, if your son doesn't hit those intangibles, I hate to tell you, that's the first barrier of entry. Now, I don't say that to say, you know, there is a place for everybody. You just have to find it, right? And
I mean, that's a saying. You can play football. I mean, you can continue to play football after high school. There's lots of options.
You can. And I don't want to say that playing football in college is the end-all, be-all, because it's not. There are... Football is the best tool for life and teaching a young man how to be a young man. And it's those things that he learns that's going to take him to the job force. It's going to take him into his marriage, into being a father. And it's like, college football is not the end-all, be-all. NFL football is not the end-all, be-all. There's plenty of things that you can do to set yourself up for a great life. You know, I mean, there's kids all the time when I'm at Reynolds that I coach, that I don't coach, that I'm writing college recommendations for. I mean, one of the best things that I saw the other day was a kid taking the ASVAB test, going into the military. And it's like, you know, college football, it's not the end all be all. There's plenty of things that you can do in life to set you up for success. And if you just, I don't want that to just be the only thing that you shoot your sights for. And if you miss, you're a failure, because you're not. Because you've learned a lot of good stuff and had a lot of good experiences along the way.
So with 8A football, we've switched to 8 divisions from 4. Much tougher, I believe, is 4. With 8, I mean, we had some blowout wins, state championship. Is it easier now with 8A to make a deep run in the playoffs?
You know, I don't want to say it's easier. I'd say it's more accessible. I'm going to give you a little bit of political answer right there.
I mean, it's true, because we went from 4 to 8, so there's a lot more.
Yeah, there's a lot more. And I, for one, here's the thing. If you make a decision, there's going to be 50% that hate it, 50% that love it. I, for one, am for the 8A classifications, simply because it's a number standpoint. Before North Carolina went to the 8A classification, they had first 4 classifications, right? You had one state championship for every 475 high schools in North Carolina, and there was 4 state championships. That was the biggest state championship to amount of teams discrepancy almost in the country, almost in the whole United States, right? And North Carolina is so unique in the fact that the you know, you got your Charlotte, you got your Raleighs, you got your Winston-Salem, Greensboro, Asheville, Wilmington, and then you got all your little podunk towns all over the place. And it's like
those guys,
and I feel like there's a lot of good teams in that 4A classification that got left out, right? And so I'm for it, you know. And at the end of the day, it's more football, it's more for us to talk about, it's more schools getting a chance to win a state championship, and I'm for that, you know. And there's some things that we got to iron out, but you know, at the end of the day, I think it's a step in the right direction.
It is more football, and it is, listen, it's more to talk about. But when you have teams like Robbinsville, their first three playoff games were 40-point wins.
8A and 1A are a little bit of an anomaly.
Yes, 1A and 8A are a little bit wild right now. Yeah. They got to kind of fix, and they have one less week, so they played on Thursday.
Played on Thursday with the bye week.
How do you feel about Thursday state championships?
I mean, you know, it is what it is, and I think 1A and 8A are just a little bit of an anomaly as far as the numbers go, as far as what other teams there are, you know, and that part I don't have figured out.
You don't have to figure it out. You're 6A.
Yeah, true. I don't have to figure that out. So in that 1A, 8A decision, it's I'm going to give you the cliche saying it's above my pay grade, and I'm just going to worry about what we got. But, you know, it is wild. And, you know, Robbinsville, man, they've kind of always been in that, you know, that kind of just that, you know, are they a 1A? Are they a 2A? But then you've got your 8As, like Huff. I mean, like, Huff is 8A as 8A gets, yes. Right? You know, so it's mass amount of kids, you know, I mean, we can't have schools with 1,000 more kids playing another school.
Yeah. There you got 2,500 kids like Audrey Cale. Yeah. And
there was a team Reynolds played in basketball. And then I think West Charlotte was similar last year when they played
yeah.
Irwin.
Yeah.
And we went to that game and it's just different.
It's different.
And you know, when you look at those schools and you take, someone talked about it with the team that Reynolds played in the playoffs for basketball. If you take the three largest Buncombe County schools.
That was me, by the way.
Was it Mike?
Largest Buncombe County schools, it was still, combine them, it was less than the amount of students.
I want to say it was Mallard Creek or Audrey Taylor. Yeah.
It was one
like
of
that.
The large Charlotte schools, yep. But it was just, I mean, that right there. So my hypothetical to you guys is this Reidsville team, okay? What classification do they win in the state championship? How many? Because I've got my answer. And I think I would have loved to see this game, but I do not think that it's all 8.
Listen, I don't think 8A football is the best football. It's just the biggest football.
I think 6A,
7A, those guys are fantastic.
Okay. 7A was a gauntlet.
Yeah. Reidsville, I don't know where they fit. I mean, they won with the amount of kids they have. Shelby scored 84 points.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah, we had a text thread, the hypothetical, and it was like, Reidsville, without their tight end, they did lose to Reagan 35-0, which is interesting. So my
I don't even think he's the best player on the team.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Neil is, I mean, Neil's electric, Neil, for sure.
He's a great basketball player, too.
Yeah, those two are unbelievable. But I would have loved to see the discipline with Wataga.
Sure.
And that would have been the matchup. I think 6A would have been the I think them and the 7A with y'all were very right. I was like,
well, this is kind of what I, you know, going into the Wataga Middle Creek game, all the credit in the world to Wataga, all the credit in the world to Middle Creek. You know, I kind of thought in playing against Wataga, I thought Middle Creek was going to have their work cut out for them. I really did. I thought, cause I couldn't, I mean, I think if you'd asked Wataga this, Middle Creek had the better athletes. They did. Middle Creek was very athletic, but there's a difference with the type of football that you see in the western part of the state and you see in Raleigh. You know, I might be wrong in saying this. I don't know this for a fact, but I know it for a little bit certainty that nobody in Raleigh runs kind of offense Wataga runs.
No.
And you can't replicate that.
And they changed it this year because in the previous years they were more run heavy.
Well,
they were more pass heavy.
It's credit to them. They're forming to what their kids do well. They could run the ball.
Exactly.
And you know, people are always really quick to talk about Wataga's offense, as they should, because they're a good offense. Their defense, man. They run that 3-4 as good as anybody. And you know, it's interesting to see, and again, it keeps us talking, it keeps us watching, you know, and
that's the best part about, you know, I know that it's like, oh, more teams are getting in, everybody makes the playoffs. Well, not everybody makes the playoffs because not every MAC team made the playoffs. So I still think, and that's a fact.
Go ahead, go ahead.
That's not a shot. That's a fact. But you know, it's one of those where the first couple rounds, I think there could be. I'm not saying that. I like the blowouts but I mean, you know, Kinston, that wide receiver, he broke two records in the same game. Yeah. So it's not like
and they
Shelby
lost by 40.
I know,
and had a running clock.
But it is not like Shelby. I mean, Shelby was averaging what, 12 points a game on defense? Their defense was not giving up anything, and it's right. Like they still gave up 41. I know they scored 100.
So, Carson, would you love to see? Let me give you this hypothetical. Would you love to take the 8 teams?
Wait, he's asking the question. What just happened?
Yes.
No, I mean, just this
yes,
is,
to answer
this
your
is
question.
Purely when, hypothetical.
When
right?
We are high school commissioners, we're going to do what you're going to ask.
This is 5 guys sitting around the table that love high school football that are putting out hypotheticals. Right? Would you love to see a world where these 8 teams that win the state championship just have a little bit of a hunger game.
100%.
And play 100%. Each other. I mean, let me tell you right now, you know how much money I would pay to watch? I mean, I would love to
Tarboro-Watauga.
Tarboro-Watauga would be fantastic, right? Ooh. I mean, it's like, we see this kind of hunger games like, but Carson, you said a stat earlier, and I'm going to see your stat and meet your stat right here. So this was 4 years ago when this was actually my first year coaching, the year that we made the run where we beat Ayla Brown. We then played Butler and beat Butler. We then played Chambers, then played Butler.
Pat
beat
loves Butler. That game.
And then went to Weddington.
The Western North Carolina Killers. Go ahead.
Weddington. So all four games, but particularly Ayla Brown and Butler and Chambers and Weddington, those four schools, this is when we were playing in 4A, those four schools had more boys in their school than we did our entire population of our high school.
Yep.
So yeah. Reynolds has 1,253 kids. Really, I think it's 1,153 kids. And all four of those schools had more boys than we did our entire students' population.
Yeah.
Right?
It's wild.
That's what you can't get. That's what you can't have.
That's why you got to go to eight.
That's why you got to go to eight. Because, I mean, again, baseball, basketball, you know, it doesn't matter as much. But when you're talking about football.
Baseball doesn't matter for sure.
No, I'm not saying that. Baseball does matter. I love baseball. I'm saying purely from a numbers standpoint and depth, right? Because the difference with us is when we have our number one guy go out, you know, we're rolling in a sophomore.
Right.
And when, you know, Butler Chambers Weddington gets their number one out, the dude that's coming in off the bench,
it's just as good.
Looks like a transformer. Seriously, you know. So that's the difference a little bit, and that's just a bigger pool to pick from. You know? So I think the state is moving in a right direction with the eight classifications.
So similar in private school football. Once you get past the first, the second is usually a big drop off. Would you consider playing any of the local private schools, Asheville School, Christ School? Would you consider putting any of them on the schedule? Obviously, you're locked in for next year, the year after. I know Coach Radford put Asheville School on their schedule. Would you consider that?
You know, that'd be a conversation I have to have with our athletic director.
Yes, indeed.
Great answer. But,
yes.
You know, I'll tell you what, though, and I'll give credit where credit's due. I respect that move for Court. I really do. I respect Court a lot as it is, but I really respect that move for them to play them. I think either he told me this or I heard him say this. He said, you know, what about the risk of losing kids to private schools, right? And of course said, well, it's happening anyway, so I might as well play them, right? And I respect that. I really do, you know. And I think it was it obviously went Asheville's way. And
some people say that it set private schools back in this area 10 years because of
that's what I said. And Court quoted me in the paper.
I don't know if this is going to get me chastised. I don't care, but I was pulling for Asheville in that game.
We all were. And then we were
no,
also
No, we were pulling, all not. But yes.
We were also pulling for Asheville School to go win the state championship because it was like we talked with Court after the game and he's like, "Yeah, I want them to go win every game by 50 now."
They did lose in the state championship.
Well, you know, we always scrimmage. One of our first scrimmages these past 4 years has been Raven Gap.
That's a whole different and private school.
Let me tell you, man, those are some dudes walking off the bus. But yeah. I think you know Coach Laws did that purposefully. I like it as well.
You guys played them in the regular season. You may not have been there. But
no, I was there.
Were you there?
I was there, and I tell you, man, that game,
the karate kick pump block was
game
my favorite.
Could have been. We had lost one of our best players the week before to a suspension, and that game might have been a little bit different if we had him. But that was a good team; they were. But you know, Raven Gap, it gives you right coming out the gate a smack in the face of reality. You know, of how good you could be or how good other teams are, and you know, it doesn't let you be satisfied at all.
Well, we should start bottling it up here, right? I've got a question.
Is it a fun one?
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, give it to us. What's the fun question?
Do you all remember? Mary was the one that found.
Is this a Hallmark question?
No.
Okay.
It isn't, but we could go to Carson for that if we need.
Yes, that's true. Go ahead, Pat.
So you know there was a show that ESPN did several years ago on the history of football, and we could never remember what the title of it was or find it again. Well, Mary just found it again tonight. It's ESPN 150 years of football history, and we started watching that a little bit tonight. Fascinating story. You know, one of the big theories about why football was founded and why it was discovered was in the wake of the Civil War.
That's right.
And there was a big fear that the men that were fighting in that, you would lose the generation that followed as far as developing and growing into manhood or whatever the idea was, because you don't have that type of a conflict going on. So that's how they believe football came to fruition. But it is unlike baseball, it was founded at the college level. That's where it started, was at the college level, which was fascinating.
Right.
But then they backed it up even further. You know why they call the football the pigskin? I didn't have any idea why they called this the pigskin. Do y'all have any idea why?
Because there's pigskin on the outside of the football.
Made of leather, made of pigskin.
Yeah, pigskin. But it went further than that. They were talking about football was actually mob football, is how they referred to it. And it was village versus village. So the way they did it
remembers these days. Awesome. Go ahead in the Civil War.
That's awesome.
And they would get a pig's bladder. So who's sitting around going, hey, here's a spare pig's bladder. Why don't we use this as a ball of some sort? And the goal was to get the village to take it from one church to the other village's church without murdering other people. And that was how that played out. But, I mean, is that not just fascinating? That
Coach,
is,
are you willing sure, to get a pig cool. bladder for your practice? And
man, I'll do whatever it takes to get these guys flying around, having fun. And so
competitive, a little juice flowing.
The pig bladder. That sounds like some, like, you know, history on the shelf, history podcast type thing that I just
Well, Pat is a history major.
I love it, man. I love random history facts, man. That's cool.
Yeah. I've got a lot of them. Well, Coach, last thing I've got, is there anything we didn't ask you that you want out there that you like to get out to the people or anything?
The people.
The community, whoever, all of us.
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, just given this platform, I'd like to thank y'all for what you guys do, you know, and highlighting high school sports, highlighting high school coaches and their programs. It gives a great platform. And, you know, it's you guys, y'all four, are what make high school sports great, because we sit around, we talk about it, we have the hypotheticals, we shoot the crap, and, man, it's fun, and it's part of what makes it special. So I appreciate you guys and what y'all do.
Yeah, likewise. And hopefully we'll chat again, like, after spring ball or that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get it.
And
going.
He'll make sure that he'll give us the staff before the season. When we do our that, he'll give us the staff. And we'll make sure we circle back to that question.
Who is your staff?
That way he'll have an hour and a half to plan.
Well, it's like been 48 hours. And it's like, even still, though, man, it's like I can't get enough hours in the day right now of trying to do stuff.
It's like
and
the college coaching search with the flight trackers. It's like you're not flying anybody in and having the.
Well, you know, it's funny, man. It's so when all this process was going on and, you know, a bunch of people were, you know, spitting out rumors, spitting out hypotheticals, who's going for it, who's going, you know, everything like that. And, you know, I had some people come up and ask me, are you going to go for it? And I told them, yes, I am. I'm going to have some stiff competition, though. There's a lot of people going to be wanting this job. And they were like, well, have you heard who else has applied? And I said, yeah, man, Lane Kiffin's in the job right now. John Gruden has been shooting around the coaching world. So, you know, and so just always kind of have a funny answer ready to go. But, yeah, man, I'm excited. I can't wait for it. It's a fantastic opportunity. Obviously, you know, Reynolds is a special, special place. And, it's special because of the kids that we have in the building, the faculty and staff that make it an all-around great place for our student-athletes. And I can't wait to get going and represent the Rocket well.
So one last question. Coach Law's retirement in the year was probably the worst-kept secret in Western North Carolina. At what point did you say, hey, I think I want to be Coach Law's predecessor?
Honest to God, you know, and I doubt that's the last question. They always say probably last question.
Because I said last it before question.
Keep it going, man. Yeah. No, keep it going.
We'll sit here all night if you
keep
want.
Keep it going. I love it. No, man. So, you know, that's a good question. When, you know, when the rumblings had came out and Coach Laws, I'll say, handled it fantastically. He never talked about it. He never, you know, it was always about the kids and it was always about what's in front of us. And I kind of modeled that mindset, right? Whenever I got asked about it, if to gauge my interest or to talk about it, I never answered because I was always focused on who we were playing that week, right? And if, you know, it, depending on who the week, what week it was, somebody would ask me and I'd say, man, I'm focused on Murphy. I'm focused on J.M. Robinson. We got to worry about Inca. You know, hey, we got North Buncombe coming in. We got Irwin coming in who's playing well. We got TC. We got to try to stop TC. and play well against them. You know, Asheville's really good. So it was always just who we were playing that week. So I never really gave it, of course I gave it thought internally, but I never publicly said it, you know, because I always did want to keep the Mike Tomlin saying, but I wanted to keep the main thing, the main thing. I wanted to keep what we were doing and keep our kids focused and at the task at hand. So, you know, there's no real answer to that. I've always known I wanted to be a head coach, always, you know, and I feel like Reynolds is a place that I've wanted to do that, but of course never publicly made that known until it was time to take a new direction. And so I stepped up.
All right, we'll make that the last question.
Yeah,
right.
Coach, we appreciate you coming by. Yeah,
thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys.
We appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Till next year, 2026, spring ball, we're out.